Jeff Merrick, hey. I have two questions for you, sir, to start off the show.
All right.
And they're both from the exalted world of bar trivia.
Now, hang
bar
on a second. Trivia, I used to play, yes. This is years ago, like 20 years ago. I was in like a bar trivia league. You'd have one home date at your own bar and then travel the next week. Is that what you're part of?
It's not a traveling thing necessarily, but it is a thing where we go to the same bar as often as we can to accumulate points.
Okay.
And then eventually enter a tournament of championships. I bring you two questions from bar trivia last night.
All right.
Both of them very interesting.
Okay.
Both of them very worldly.
Oh.
What is the accoutrement, the accompaniment when you order a cocktail called a Gibson?
Is it orange?
Oh, sorry, as I do my Alex Trebek. The answer we were looking for, of course, as all the drunks in the audience know, is an onion.
What's in a Gibson?
A mini cocktail.
What's in a Gibson? I don't even know what's in a Gibson.
I believe it's a gin-based drink, sir.
Okay.
All right. Question number two. This is a very important one. This is one that we got wrong.
Right. Did you get Gibson,
maybe
right?
Actually another bonus question. Yes, because I know what a Gibson is.
Oh, Gibson's a gin
this
martini.
One I got wrong,
oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Gin, vermouth, and pickled onion.
This one I got wrong, though.
Okay.
What was the first nation to domesticate the chicken? The first nation to domesticate the chicken.
I don't know.
The answer, sir, is, as everybody in the audience knows, India. India was the first place to domesticate the chicken. Would you like one more?
Why not? I'm on a roll.
Here we go. Here it comes.
Okay.
Quiet, he's rolling. It's from the Animal House. Remember that?
The hot house here.
All right. Where in the world did the delicious cheese-based dish fondue originate?
I want to say France.
Where in the...
I'll say France.
That, sir, was my answer, and it was incorrect.
Hmm.
The correct answer is Switzerland.
That makes some sense, too. Okay, sure. In the ballpark. In the ballpark.
Bar trivia last night. By the way, the greatest part of bar trivia last night, besides the awkward Tinder date that was going on beside us, the best part of bar trivia last night was that we named our team 9 out of 10. Each round is 10 questions. So the hope was to have it be where the MC said 9 out of 10 gets 9 out of 10. Little did we know we jinxed ourselves, and at no point in the game did we get higher than 8 rights.
You know, I can
so
remember
bar trivia.
I can remember specifically when I threw in the towel on bar trivia, when I said to myself, you know what, this game is too good for me. I need to get out of it. It was at Whalen's Pub in the West End of Toronto, and I was part of this this bar trivia league. And the quiz master asked a question that I didn't believe anybody in the world would get. I had never heard the question before. And this guy knocked it down like breaking sticks. Let me ask you, and I hope I get the word right, because this is going back like 20 years. The question was,
okay,
what is the definition of stitiopigis?
Stitiopigis.
Yeah.
Can I have it in a sentence?
No.
What is the root?
that's a legitimate question. And this guy got it like, boom, right. Fast. Stitiopigis.
Stitiopigis is the study of studio pigeons.
That's what I would have answered. This guy knocks it down right away. He goes, and he has like a playing with a bunch of Brits, and he goes, is that the fat ass? I'm like, yeah, fat dude, stitiopigis. I said, you know what? This game's too good for me. I need to get out.
I got one more because this one was a real head scratcher, and this is just for the people from the U.S. listening.
Right.
And we got this one right. What is the longest month of the year in most of the United States? Do you know the answer to this?
The longest month of the year?
Yep. Venture a guess.
January?
It's October. 31 days, and in some cases, although I think they changed it, this might be an outdated question he was asking. In some cases, when you fall back, your clocks. you gain an hour of sleep. So 31 days plus an extra hour of sleep in the middle of the month, it's the longest month.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes some sense.
According to our quizmaster.
All right, here's another one for you.
It's a great hockey podcast that presents you amazing information about the coolest game on ice and tickles your brain.
What does a spermologist collect, Greg?
One would assume that a spermologist collects ejaculate?
Trivia.
What?
Yeah. Someone's good at trivia. Dude's a good spermologist. Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
Wow.
That's what I got for you. See?
That one.
Learn something every day on the podcast.
That one I had no idea. Yeah. I had no idea on the spermologist.
Spermology, yep.
That's interesting.
Thank you.
I spilled much trivia as a child watching Cinemax.
I spilled much trivia. Had to play.
I hear Maddie in the background.
Yeah, I know. I'm in the same room as Maddie. I had to play banker and liquidate my holdings of trivia.
Anyways, sorry to be gross. It's too early in the morning for this. Me from New York, Merrick over in Toronto. It's a Thursday edition. Jarmo Kekäläinen will be joining us today to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets, the GM meetings, and everything else. The question of the day today is about Finland. We wanted to know, in honor of Jarmo coming on the show, who your favorite NHL Finn is. Now, the caveat here, of course, being we weren't going to allow anyone to go to the default answer of Timo Salani.
Everybody
would have Salani. Timo Salani is everyone's favorite Finn. Yeah, I mean, it's pointless. It's absolutely pointless to ask who your favorite Finn is. It's like, who's your favorite Gretzky? Now, some wise asses will say Brent, but most people are going to say Wayne.
No, Keith.
There's no sense in asking you the Finn.
Keith, yeah.
Walter. Okay.
Paulina.
Right, terrible example.
I didn't get a lot of Paulina, bud.
Oh, okay. Now my example is completely invalid. Point being is that we weren't going to allow you to just answer Timo Salani to this question.
Yeah.
The Finns should be on your mind. They, of course, thwarted the American juggernaut in the bronze medal game. You should know all about Finland and
they won
great virtues.
They won the World Junior Hockey Championship, right?
They won the World Junior Hockey Championship for people who care about that sort of thing. I don't really care unless the States is playing for the gold. please to be telling us your favorite Finn in NHL history. PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at MVSW. I will tell you right now that if Timo Salani is the default answer, Saku Koivu may be the second default answer.
People love him. Yeah, they love him from Saku. How many?
You have a favorite Finn, sir?
I always loved Yari Kurri, big number 17 for the Oilers. I was a big Yari Kurri fan.
What did you like about Yari Kurri?
He scored a lot of goals. He played with Wayne Gretzky.
Yes, he did.
He played with the Edmonton Oilers.
For those of us younger folks in the audience, he was sort of the Chris Kunitz to Wayne Gretzky's Sidney Crosby, wasn't he?
No, a little more highly productive was Yari Kurri. a great skater, amazing release. You know what he's kind of like?
He was the
Mike Bossy to Gretzky's Trache.
So not the Pascal Dupuis to
No.
The briefly Marian Hossa to Gretzky's Crosby?
The Marian Hossa?
The Bill Guerin to Gretzky's Crosby? Just, can we make this about Sid somehow?
Oh, is this NBC? Is this what we're doing? Is this the NBC game?
Oh, okay. How dare you, sir. That's a content partner you're snarking about,
okay,
sir.
Sorry, I apologize.
My favorite Finn, of course, if you think about my likes and dislikes in life, of course, my favorite player of all time is Claude Lemieux. So it would lend itself that my favorite Finn of all time is who, Jeff Merrick?
Jarkko Ruutu.
Yeah, Esa Tiikkanen.
Oh. Esa Tiikkanen, who, by the way, Mark Messier in New York once, after practice, picked up by the throat and pressed him up against the wall, lifting him off of his feet.
He chokeslammed him?
He didn't chokeslam. From the people that were there, and pretty obvious considering who I know who told me the story, he picked up Tiikkanen. I can't remember what the issue was about, but Messier was like having none of Tiikkanen that day. And grabbed him by the throat and lifted him up against the wall.
It just doesn't seem in Esa Tiikkanen's character to upset someone like that. I don't understand what he could have done to get under Messier's skin.
Really seems sort of, you know, out of character for
things I love about Esa Tiikkanen. Tiikkanen, of course, for those who don't know, Tiikkanen was a member of those Edmonton Oilers dynasty teams, a prototypical pest in this league, and really the kind of pest that you love. He won five Stanley Cups, four with the Oilers, one with the 94 Rangers, and he was the kind of player that could get under your skin with his yapping mouth, with some cheap stuff. He would shadow the other team's best players, and he would have a mouth on him that you wouldn't believe, except no one could understand what he was saying. It was complete gibberish.
Really, eh?
It was Tikkanese. Remember Tikkanese?
Yeah.
He spoke a hybrid of Finnish and English that people labeled Tikkanese. So he would yap on the ice. It was like being yapped at by Benicio del Toro from The Usual Suspects. Like, you know, he's saying something cruel. You're just not sure what it is. And then the other thing, obviously, I loved about Tikkanen was the fact that he could yap, he could pest, he could shadow, but he could also put the puck in the net too.
That's it.
And he was a very good offensive player. 244 career goals, 630 career points in 877 games. And then finally, the thing I loved most about Tikkanen was the fact that the two teams I follow the most, one because they're my favorite team, the Devils, the other because they're the team in my coverage area, the Capitals, are probably the two most embarrassing tour stops he had in the NHL. He lasted 9 games in New Jersey before they flipped him to Vancouver.
Hey,
nine games.
Speaking of Finns, and we've all already disqualified Teemu Selanne, one thing I've always wondered about, and I wonder if it goes back to Pentti Lund, who was the first ever Finn in the NHL. He played with the Bruins and the Rangers, and he wore number 13. Does anyone know if that's why Teemu Selanne wore 13?
I do not know.
And if anyone out there has a taller forehead than me, and there are plenty of them, let me know on Twitter if that's why Teemu Selanne wore number 13.
The Selanne thing, by the way, and I might have mentioned this in the podcast when we got back from Sochi, but like the Michael Granlund story with Selanne is the greatest, one of my favorite
awesome
stories from the Olympics. Like the fact that a kid who grew up with a Selanne poster on his wall, biggest fan, gets to, you know, win a medal with him on his line. And like Selanne has that effect on people where you don't often hear the notion anymore of it's an honor to play with this guy. You know what I mean? Like, you hear people saying, oh, I'd like to play with him. Oh, I've been looking forward to play with him, blah, 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 blah. You never get to hear it in the terms of it's an honor to play with him. And maybe it's the elder statesman thing, although I don't necessarily get to hear that a lot about Jágr. A lot of people say I enjoy watching Jágr play, but I think Selanne gets more than anybody else. It's an honor to play with him is the thing he gets.
You don't think Czech players feel that way about Jágr?
No, they could.
Not like Selanne.
I meant across the board. I meant across the board, like any nationality, not simply just the Finnish guys with Selanne. Anybody that comes and plays with Selanne.
Oh yeah.
It's like an honor.
They all say the same thing. Yeah, he's the ultimate. He's the ultimate dude, really, in a lot of ways. Like everybody kind of wants to be a little bit like or a lot like Teemu Selanne. Like here's a guy who's one of the greatest hockey players in the history of the world. Here's a guy who, you know, isn't shy about bringing his drinking buddies to the Stanley Cup final and having them tour around with them, inebriated the entire way. Here's a guy that collects, like, he has the most outrageous collection of cars. You ever seen his garage?
No.
It's like expensive car. He collects like vintage cars, race cars, sports cars. He's a dude. He is a dude, and he plays sports, and he makes a lot of money, and he's got his own restaurant, and everything about Teemu Selanne is just effing cool.
Exactly. That'll be clipped, by the way. That'll be on Twitter in about 2 seconds.
What?
Your quote about Selanne. Everything about Teemu Selanne is effing cool.
It's true.
Texas metalhead Jari Lehtinen. Hands down, the most hardworking, well-positioned, best defensive forward I've had the pleasure to watch.
Yep.
And a great example of a guy who probably should have won two handfuls of Selkies were it not for the inherent bias against wingers in that award.
Could be. Yeah, he was one of the best defensive forwards I've ever seen. He was, absolutely.
We get a lot of here's a Yanni Ninema from Brett Trappener.
Ooh.
We get a lot of here's Brian Y with Kari Taco.
You know why we love him.
Because of the trade, was it?
Yeah, the greatest trade in the history of the NHL. And two general managers got together and said, we have to make this deal. It's right for hockey. When Kari Taco was traded for Bruce Bell.
That's right.
Car. It was the Taco Bell trade.
Taco Bell trade.
Actually happened.
Kim Possible, Ole Mata, the Mata man crush, as we call it, followed by Jussi Jokinen, because puns, Mata for Calder. Mata for Calder is an interesting call, actually. And I have to go back and check his numbers. I'm not quite. We're going to do some awards race stuff on the show today. But, God, God, was he impressive in the Olympics.
Yeah, and the funny thing, too, is everybody thought that this guy was going back to the London Knights. I mean, the London Knights thought he was going back. To the London Knights this year. They did not expect, I don't think, that Ole Mata was going to make the Pittsburgh Penguins. But that is, because it's such a difficult position to judge, and right. And we saw last year with Jonas Brodin, it always sort of ends up getting the short end of the stick.
Ole Mata, 28 points in 64 games, a plus 12.
Remarkable. Hey, our guest is standing by. Let's not waste any more time, Greg Wyshynski.
All right. Joining us now, the general manager of the resurgent and current, and hopefully, because we love him, playoff-bound Columbus Blue Jackets, Jaromo Kekäläinen joins us on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Hey, it's Greg and Jeff's over there, and welcome to the show, sir, and congrats on the success this season so far for Columbus.
Well, thanks very much. We still got a lot of hockey left, and certainly haven't reached our goal by any means, So congratulate me if we make the playoffs and win some hockey games there too.
Well, so far so good. You know, we were just before you came on, Jaromir, we were just sort of spitballing our favorite favorite Finnish-born NHLers. Growing up as a young hockey player yourself, who made it into the NHL, who was your favorite Finnish NHLer?
Well, Jari Kurri was the idol for every Finnish player of my generation growing up. Obviously, he was a superstar back then and won the Stanley Cups. But there are a lot of hockey players that didn't become so well known on this side of the Atlantic. Matti Hagman was one player that did play for the Boston Bruins and Edmonton Oilers, who was a great player in Finland. But Jari Kurri was definitely number one.
So how much pride do you feel when you see what happened in Sochi with that team winning bronze over the Americans?
It was awesome. It was a great experience. And I think that the one thing that Finnish teams are always known for is the ability to become a team and play as a team and battle as a team and play a really tight defensive game and no egos, and everybody works hard and sacrifices for the team. So that all came together. We were underdogs. We even lost some guys to injuries. We kept battling, and everybody stuck to the game plan, and coaching staff did an excellent job, and we overachieved. So it was great to see, and I was really happy for the guys.
And I thought one of the more interesting things to come out of that was the mindset difference. You know, the Americans seem to have adopted the Canadian mindset of gold or bust. If you don't win gold, you're going to sulk and not show up for the bronze medal game. And the Finns just go and say, we're going to medal. You know, it doesn't matter what medal we get, but we want a medal, and we want our last game in this tournament to be a game that we can leave proud that we had played.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that the Americans played hard in the bronze medal game. We just played our best game. We had a little bit of luck, and our power play clicked, and then they got frustrated. It wasn't a 5-0 game. It was probably a 2-3-0 game, but we got a few goals at the end, yep. and when they took the stupid penalties, it was definitely something that we were going for. We were really we wanted to get the bronze medal, but I think they did too, and it was a good game.
But I'm gonna say this right now: they would have beaten the Finns had they had Jack Johnson and Brandon Dubinsky on that team. You know it, and I know it, Jaromo.
Well, I'm not gonna criticize anybody's selections. I know how hard it is, especially for the Canadians and the U.S. team management to pick their teams. They have so many good players to choose from. We don't have that luxury with Team Finland. We had four defensemen that played in the NHL. And four get picked from the European leagues, but it's certainly a hard job. I think Jack Johnson has played very well for us since he didn't get selected. I think Brandon Dubinsky has been excellent for us all year. So those guys will have another chance. Jack's already played in the Olympics; he'll get another chance. And I think Dubinsky can yet reach another level in his play and get into that group as well.
One more last question about Finnish hockey, and we'll move on to the Blue Jackets here. We all know what the Swedes have done with their program over the last 20 years, how it's been revamped and re-energized. What's the Finnish program like?
I think there's a lot of skill development involved, and I think the coaching has done a tremendous job in the lower level of the development. I always had the philosophy when I was working in Finland that you got to get the best coaches to coach the young kids that at the age when they learn to play hockey, because when they're 16, 17, 18 years old, you can't teach them anymore. They either know how to play already or they don't. The hockey sense part, I think you teach that when they learn how to play. Anybody can teach the kids to skate or stick handle or shoot the puck, but I think you need a deeper understanding of the game to teach them how to play. So I think you have to have excellent coaching in the minor hockey level. And I actually took that model from the U.S. Side when I was in St. Louis, and I saw Al MacInnis and Basil McRae and those guys coaching that teams, 10, 12, 12-year-old teams in St. Louis and beating, winning Silver Stick and the Quebec Bantam Tournament with teams from St. Louis. I think it was a credit to great coaching.
Now, Yarmo, you make the big move at the trade deadline, trading Marian Gaborik to the LA Kings. I've been reading the information about you over the last year, what you were looking at Gaborik, what you're hoping to see, and that was going to be the basis on whether or not you wanted to re-sign him. Things didn't work out. My question to you is, does the fact that things didn't work out kind of frame the original trade with the Rangers in a different way in your mind? Do you see that as a disappointment or have any regret about that initial trade with the Rangers?
Well, things don't always work out the way you envision them, and I think you have to realize the situation, make another decision, and move on. And you try to learn from every decision that you make, and make better decisions in the future. That's the way I look at it. I don't look back and overanalyze it anymore. It's done. It's done. You move on, and our team's doing well.
Ryan Johansson, it may have taken a little bit longer than many thought based on where he was drafted, coming out of the Portland Winterhawks organization. Your thoughts on Ryan Johansson this year, Yarmo?
Well, I used to do a lot of work and a long time on the scouting side of things, and I always kept saying to both the management and the players that it's not a sprint, it's a marathon with the young kids and the prospects, and you have to give everybody their own time to develop and get used to the level of play and the pro side, and especially in the NHL level. And I wouldn't call him a late bloomer. He's only 20, he's going to be 22 years old this year. And he's just a big body. It took a little bit longer time to adjust, but he's got such tremendous potential to be one of the top players in this league. And I think he's another guy that with hard work and determination and getting his strength and quickness and explosiveness on another level, he can get to the absolute elite of the NHL with his skill package and the way he can play the game.
You know, it is a good point too that in a lot of ways we expect specifically players in the first round to make the NHL coming right off their draft year, if not the following season, or else it almost seems as if it's a letdown. I know every player is different, but how much of a long view do you take with players specifically that you take in the first round?
Well, I think it's my job and our management's job to decide when the player's ready. You have to put him into a situation where he can succeed. And by rushing, you might do the opposite. So it's our job. It's our responsibility to make sure that we take the right steps with the development, put him in the right situations to succeed and improve in their career and develop rather than putting him in situations where they can't succeed and go the other way.
So has it been night and day for you and the team after realignment with this Eastern Conference schedule? I mean, has it made a remarkable change for you guys at all?
Well, schedule's hard this year, obviously, with the Olympics and the condensed schedule because of it. The travel is a lot easier. That's a remarkable difference when you come from Carolina or Washington or a couple of other of our divisional rivalries, and you're flying an hour or you're flying 20 minutes from Pittsburgh back home compared to flying back from San Jose or some of the other Western teams several times a year. So that's been a lot easier. Schedule's been hard, and it's going to be hard to the finish here. Lots of hockey left, like I said. And we have a really hard schedule, especially now when we get the Dallas game rescheduled and everything. So it's going to be a battle.
At the general manager's meetings in Boca Raton, was there one issue or a couple of issues that you were specifically fixated on, or a couple that you were particularly married to? I mean, Ken Holland with the extended overtime, Jim Rutherford of Carolina was on that bandwagon, as was Doug Armstrong. Was there one thing that you were particularly passionate about?
Well, I'm still kind of in the stage that I listen more than I try to speak, being a young general manager in that group. So there was some interesting discussion, great ideas. I think generally everybody felt the game's in good shape and we don't have to make any major changes. So I thought it was a very good discussion. I think there's going to be some good improvements as a result of it. And we have to take the proper steps with the competition committee and the board of governors meetings, obviously, get those in place. But this was my first time being in those three-day meetings where you really exchange ideas and have time to really reflect on the ideas of the others, and it was a great experience.
When you, without using any names, because we don't expect you to be talking out of school here, but when you're in these meetings with some of these guys and they're presenting ideas and passionately talking about the things that they believe in, do you kind of see a different side of some of these general managers than you would, say, in a phone call about a trade? Do you end up leaving these things with more respect for some guys?
Well, I have a tremendous amount of respect for all my peers. I think that everybody tries to do a good job. Everybody works hard, and there's a lot of expectations for every one of us to do a good job, which we should. But it's a little bit more relaxed setting there. Obviously, we don't work all day. There was a little bit of pleasure involved, too, a round of golf and a nice dinner to honor Larry Plow, who was a longtime general manager, mm-hmm. my boss in St. Louis. So there are a lot of things that we could enjoy too, so that always brings out another side in some of the guys that you don't know as well. But it was a good chance for me to get to know some of the guys a little bit closer too.
You know, I'm glad you brought up Larry Plow as well, because we all deal with many people in the industry, and Larry Plow is someone that whenever I spoke to him, I always came away feeling better. And when you consider, you know, various, you know, medical situations that he's gone through with his family, he's always someone that's upbeat and chipper, and I always appreciate any time I get to have spent with Larry Plow. From your point of view, what was your relationship like with Larry?
Well, he was a true gentleman always when I worked with him, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him as a not only as a hockey executive but as a person. He's just a great guy, and like you said about his family situation, I admired the way he took care of his wife through the hard times that she battled, mm-hmm. and my respect for him grew even to another level after seeing that. He's a great guy. He's respected by everybody. You never hear anybody say bad word about Larry Plow, and if you could ever get to that in your life, that'd be a pretty great accomplishment. I might not ever get there, but like I said, I have great amount of respect for Larry Plow.
And last one for me, Yarmo, and thanks for joining us today. I mean, obviously, we can't go through this without at least touching on the fact that your team was involved in the Rich Peverly game. What were your thoughts when you saw this whole thing go down?
It's scary. It's a shocker for everybody, and it kind of puts things into perspective. There are more important things in life than hockey scores and standings and the end results of a game, and that's why we cancel the game and reschedule it, or will reschedule it, and we just hope that Rich Peverly is going to be fine and can live a healthy and normal life, and hopefully play hockey too.
Sorry about that. Did you get any word yet from the league on when and where the game, or when the game might be, and what the format's going to be? Are they going to award you guys the goal and then start from the beginning again, or how that whole thing's going to work out?
Well, I think that if you look at the way they did it when Yuri Fisher had a similar situation, I think the league will probably be consistent on it. There's no final decision yet, so I'm not speaking for the league here, but I think that the idea that we got right now is that the whole game will be played, and we're going to start with a 1-0 lead. I don't have a definite answer on the day yet. I have an idea on it, when it's going to be, but we're still working on that.
Yarmo, last one for me. We'll let you get on with your day. As we all know, you have one of the sharpest scouting eyes in the business. Specifically, you know, your draft picks with the St. Louis Blues are legendary. Can you remember one time where you really had to go to bat for someone and fight for one pick, you know, do the Khrushchev, you know, banging your shoe on the table, this is going to be our guy, I insist on it, I'm fierce on this one. Was there one player that was like that for you?
Well, Well, I had the Larry Pro was always great about letting the scouts do their job, so I had the power to make the choice if I wanted to. So I always joked with our guys that if I needed two votes, I had two votes. If I needed three, I had three. But I think the best part of it was that we had a great scouting staff, great guys that I worked with there, and that's the only recipe for having a successful draft. Is you nobody can do it alone. No head scout can claim that I can do it alone. I have to have a great staff. I have Ville Siren here with me now as our head scout, and he was our European scout. But there were a few battles here and there, and you know, sometimes you had to take a chance on certain guys that maybe I had to outvote the guys. But mostly it was unanimous, and like I said, we had a great staff there and put a lot of great memories together.
Great, Jarmo Kekäläinen. Sir, we are, of course, unabashed Blue Jackets fans in this podcast. We want nothing but Columbus to get in. Mm-hmm. Even if it's at the expense of my New Jersey Devils, I would gladly back the BJs in the playoffs this year. And good luck to you, sir. Hopefully you make the finish line.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jarmo.
Yeah, that's right. Even if the Devils don't get in,
wow,
I would be okay if Columbus gets in. Now, keep in mind, I think the Devils are getting in. 71 points in 66 games, one game in hand for Philly, one game in hand for Columbus, two off the pace points-wise for the Devils. I think they're getting in.
Maybe. I don't know. That one's going to be a race. Much more of a race than in the Western Conference.
For those who don't know, this is the way that the Metro Sectoral Division sets up right now. The Rangers, the Penguins are gone. I mean, the Penguins are already in the playoffs. They've played the first round already of the playoffs.
That's like the Teemu Selanne of our question of the day.
Yeah,
you can't
exactly
count them.
Right. Pittsburgh's got 92 points. The Rangers, 74. Columbus, 73. Those are your top three. We drop down to the wild card. Philly, 73, one win in back of Columbus. The Devils, 71, 2 points back of the Flyers. The Capitals, 70, 3 points back of the Flyers. I don't think Carolina's got a chance. It's a New Jersey, Washington, Philly race in the Metro with Philly and the Lightning. I'm sorry, and the Rangers and Columbus. Philly and the Lightning right now have the wild card, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the real story here, of course, beyond the Metro division, is the fact that the streak is at risk. For Detroit.
The Detroit Red Wings, yeah. 22 years, I want to say. Is it 22 or 23?
I think it's 22.
22 and this would be 23?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. So they've got 71 points around. Two off the pace of the Flyers and six back of Montreal. So it's looking like Boston, Toronto, Montreal will be your top three in the Atlantic with Tampa Bay and Detroit in the mix for the wild card.
And that's why that...
And Ottawa. I know they're plummeting and they're terrible.
No, they got to go on.
I know, but Ottawa still, I mean, they're not mathematically eliminated or anything. They're still there.
Okay. All right. Are you done? That's why...
Because they are.
That's why that Columbus Blue Jackets win over Detroit 2 nights ago was huge. Mm-hmm. The 4-1 win where Foligno scored from his belly like his dad. And a gorgeous second effort. That's why that game was enormous for the CBJs and terrible for the Detroit Red Wings.
So there's your Eastern Conference playoff race. Over in the West, as Merrick mentioned, it's kind of a more exciting race to see who gets the top seed than it is necessarily who makes the bottom two. I mean, right now you got St. Louis in the driver's seat, 95 points, then Anaheim, 93, back of them with 91, Colorado and San Jose. Chicago 90, LA 82. Then the wild card right now is the Wild with 77. They're in good shape. They're four up right now in Phoenix with a game in hand. Dallas, a little bit dicier. 74 points, one up on Phoenix with a game in hand, and four up on the resurgent Vancouver Canucks.
With three games in hand.
With three games.
All right. That's the one right there. I know Vancouver won last night in the shootout. Good for you, Chris Higgins. Three games in hand over Vancouver, and Vancouver's 4 points down.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You're saying, you know, there's only 14 games left in the season for Vancouver, which is a problem in some people's eyes.
In most people's eyes. Like that game last night, it was one of those games where, you know, watching Vancouver and Winnipeg last night, did you not get the feel that really neither team deserved to win that one?
Wow.
Having said that, look at you, Alex Burrows.
Yeah.
Coming back with a pair of goals, and that the one that made it 2-2, that little bunt off in midair as the puck bounced back. That's an awesome. You can tell he was at one point Canada's greatest ball hockey player, and he was because he played competitively. But that's a total ball hockey goal.
Someone said we shat on Burrows on the show. Did we do that recently?
What? How?
I don't remember that at all.
I mean, just because you point out that he hasn't scored a goal all year doesn't mean you're taking a dump on the guy. It's just a fact.
I thought that Gillis made a really good point in his GM meetings, tête-à-tête with the media. I mean, talking about what ails the Canucks. I mean, you talk about the Twins. You talk about Burrows. I mean, Burrows has been a huge issue for them this year.
Yeah, Burrows has been an issue. Depth up front has been an issue. The Santarelli injury was an issue. Production from the back end has been an issue. The goaltending situation has been an issue.
The coach
chasing down Bob Hartley in the intermission has been an issue.
Bob Hartley. You
know, Bob has been a lot of issues with the fact that, and again, I know I keep pounding on it, but it's there and it's true and it's kind of obvious. They whiffed on the draft 5 years in a row, and they're paying for it. They don't have players between the ages of 20 and 25 in the NHL.
The curse of the successful team, though, isn't it?
Not necessarily. I mean, I know they'll draft low, and I know that they're an aging squad right now. But, I mean, that draft record is spectacular.
8 games at home, 6 on the road for Vancouver the rest of the way. Their tragic number is 24. For those who are wondering about the back end of the standings, the tragic number for the Buffalo Sabres, any combination of points lost by the Sabres or points gained by the last playoff seed.
That'd be the Flyers.
You want to guess what their tragic number is right now?
5.
Close, 7.
Oh, jeez. Someone's done. That's okay. Yeah. But listen, they have eyes on Ekblad, and they have eyes more specifically on McDavid next
week. No, and I know. I mean, you're right. They probably are done. They only have 5 more home games. So, I mean, rallying is going to be really tough at this point for Buffalo. Their tragic number is 7. The tragic number for the Edmonton Oilers, if you care to venture a guess?
Dozen.
12. Yes, correct.
Woo, yeah. Amazing. I'm awesome. Woo, check
tragic
me out.
Number savant. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The trick for Dallas... The trick for Dallas, well, first off, obviously, now that we're transitioning into the what does it mean for them on the ice with Peverly thing, got to fill that role. He was playing a top-line role for them. The trick for Dallas is 7 home games. 7 home games in their last 18.
Good.
No, not good.
Oh, wait a minute. In their 8 last – oh, yeah, yeah. No, they got a lot of games. But you know, they faced the same thing last year, last 2 years, didn't they?
Yeah.
The majority of their back end of the schedule, it's all on the road.
Sure. But what we're looking at this year is – 18-10-6 at home and 14-13-4 on the road. Yeesh. Oof. Home cooking. Gotta love that. Love that Texas barbecue.
Tell you what.
Don't necessarily like that road food.
You know what looked like a pretty pretty savvy move? Well, it's turning out to be a savvy move, and in no way can you predict the injury, but what a lifesaver getting Tim Thomas at deadline.
Right?
Uh-huh. And you don't know what's going to happen to Kari Lehtinen, and that situation's going to happen to him, but woof. That's a close call. That helps them.
By the way, Capitals have 7 home games, 8 left on the road. Devils, 10 home games, 6 left on the road. Another reason why the Devs are in good shape. 10 home games.
Where will there be a bigger bloodletting if they don't make the playoffs? Vancouver or Washington?
I think in both cases you could see the coach and the GM go.
Oh, you could see coach in Vancouver. Oh, man, you know what? It's funny because Tortorella is getting chewed up in Vancouver right now.
Right.
Year one, guys.
Year 1 of 5.
That's right.
Well, you heard Jarmo Kekäläinen say it, and he's a very smart man. Sometimes you make moves, and you need to make the moves to make rid of the moves.
That's not – you got to practice. That's not it. You're closer to the Swedish chef than you are to Jarmo Kekäläinen.
By the way, congratulations to whoever answered Håkan Lube to the question of the day.
He's Swedish. Oh, by the way, question of the day, celebrity style today, answered by Keith Primo.
Oh.
His answer?
Yeah.
One of his best friends.
Sammy Kapanen?
Correct. Yeah.
Sammy Kapanen.
Remember he told me that was the one guy that when he was in the room when he got moved that really affected him. Kapanen was like loved everywhere he went.
He was a really beloved player, but he was one of those guys that the coaches did this thing with him, and it's one of my least favorite things in the world. You know what it is?
Made him a defenseman?
Yes. Oh, God. I hate defensemen to become forwards, and I hate forwards to become defensemen. I like my peanut butter with my peanut butter, my jelly with my jelly.
Okay, so where are you at with Mark Streit then?
With Mark Streit?
Yeah, because he was, you know, sometimes
forward.
Sometimes forward, sometimes defenseman with the Habs.
he does not have the purity of a Kimmo Timonen.
I mean, now, granted, the Brent Burns thing happened, and that's okay. That's kind of an anomaly. He was kind of a shitty defenseman.
But, I mean, he had played both positions before.
Yeah, he was a tweener to begin with. You know, he was a guy who could play second base or shortstop. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that's the guy. It's the guys that they look at, and they're like, oh, we can move him. Tommy Albelin to the Devils is a great example. Albelin was a guy who was on the back end for the majority of his career, and then injuries would happen or some shit would happen, and instead of dipping down into the minors to get somebody, they'd move him up to forward. I'm like, why? What is the point of that?
I mean, usually it's you know, necessitated by an injury.
Yeah, I hate that.
And it just really bothers you, right?
It really does. It's one of my biggest pet peeves in hockey is the
wait a minute, you
forward.
Don't belong there. No. Your body's not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to be
in that
position.
You're not trained for it. It's you're not trained to be a forward. You're trained to be a defenseman. It's like if they send a pitcher up to pinch hit. Like, wah, wah, wah?
Really? Man, my mic is... Do we have a mic stock here? This is a...
Ooh. Get a little...
This mic is like...
Fuzzaroo there.
Well, I had it yesterday on the podcast, too. by the way, Sammy Kapanen... one more thing on Sammy Kapanen. I remember talking to Paul Maurice about your welcome to the NHL moment. I said, Paul, when was the moment where you really realized, holy smokes, I'm coaching in the National Hockey League now? And he said, as a practice, and all the guys would gather around, and they were talking about the drill or whatever, and on the whistle, I said, okay, so when I blow the whistle, I want you guys, you know, sprint, I don't know how long, like, you know, two laps or whatever it was. And he said Sammy Kapanen was standing right beside him. Said, I blew the whistle, and Sammy Kapanen took off, and it's the fastest I've ever seen anyone. I didn't think it was possible for anyone to skate that fast. And when he saw Sammy Kapanen take off, he said, oh, man, this is the NHL.
That's the thing. Speed's the thing. Speed's the great difference maker between the different levels of hockey. You hear the players talk about it whenever they come up. You know, the AHL is a very competitive league. It's a very good league.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch the AHL and feel like you've seen a good product. But the first thing all those guys say is when they come up to the NHL, speed. Oh, my God, these guys are fast. Oh, my God, the game moves so much faster.
Yeah, and being able to think at that level as well. It's not just the speed, but being able to – and it takes a while. I mean, look at Nathan MacKinnon. Mind you, only took him 25 games, but he's a different player from the beginning of the year.
Yep.
And he has speed. So even if you have that speed, being able to think the game – like Nathan MacKinnon didn't get faster this year. He's just been that fast. But once he was able to, you know, okay, I know what this game is about. Now I can think this game. I know how much time I have. I know where I need to go. I know where guys are going to be. It just clicks together.
Is he the stone cold lock for the Calder right now?
You would have to think so, right? You really would. And he just continues to impress. Can I use your microphone, Matty?
Oh, God, he's going to get angry now. You wouldn't want to see him when he's angry. His muscles will bulge out. It'll tear right through the classic rock T-shirt he's probably wearing.
How's that? Is that better? Yeah.
Let's
throw this microphone out.
Let's blow it up.
Do you have
an M80?
No, I'm taking this apart right now. Actually, I'm actually taking this apart. Like this should not be used. Hang on.
Can I do play-by-play of this?
If you want.
Please. What is he doing?
I'm taking it apart.
He's using his hands gently on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to drop in a second, too, so I gotta be careful. This is just like, this doesn't, there, okay.
Okay.
This mic is awful, eh? Has a party
right
in here. Yeah.
Jeff, can you fix this? If I put my mouth around it, will it work better?
No.
Jeff,
no.
You better watch the Tim and Sid producer, by the way. This needs to go. This is terrible.
Wait, Tim and Sid have a producer?
This. This is awful.
How hard is it to produce that show where you just have to hit that button once the team is going?
Yeah.
LeBron, Toronto Raptors, MMA.
Honestly, like that can't go in the garbage fast enough. It's 2 days of hell. Yeah, as a party, you want? What's that? I got Maddie's mic. What does he need a mic for?
He doesn't need a mic.
I can just yell.
Yeah, you got Maddie in the background.
Yeah, the more things he says, the less people like him.
What have you been in here? 2 days?
2 days, and that mic is awful.
You're breaking stuff in 2 days.
It was broken when I got here.
Hockey Night in Canada, you can tell.
Hey, sorry, man. Hey, I'm on the frickin' dream team. You better have some respect.
You are in the dream team, sir. It's true. It's absolutely true.
That mic's terrible.
All right, listen.
That's,
McKinnon,
that's
51 points, 22 goals. He has the double-double right now going. If you go back and look at the Calder winners through the years, they either have to lead the league in points or lead the league in goals for rookies. Mm-hmm. McKinnon has both. Tyler Johnson is the closest to him in goals with 20, two back of the pace. And Andrej Palat is 42 points. He is 9 off the pace point-wise. So McKinnon's got this thing wrapped up because, listen, they're not giving it to Hampus Lindholm as much as they should.
Nope.
22 points plus 22.
You would give it to Hampus Lindholm over
not over
Nathan
McKinnon.
No.
Let me rephrase that. They should respect the candidacy, but I don't know if they will or not.
We'll see when it all heats up. Who's the agent there? Who's Hampus Lindholm's agent?
I don't know.
Because around voting time, when you start making your phone calls and making your pleas for the guys.
Here's my prediction on the Calder for the top three as a voter, okay?
Okay.
McKinnon, Krug, Kreider. I think the Tampa Bay boys are going to knock each other out, and also there's that notion of those guys picking up points because based on who they play with.
Hang on a second here. I'm going to get out my agent book.
No.
My agent book for this.
Shifley's injury submarined his candidacy.
Too bad, I know.
Him and Kreider are probably going to be right neck and neck for that last other spot.
Look who Lindholm's agent is. Rich Winter.
Oh, let me rephrase that. Hampus Lindholm wins the Calder.
There you go. All right.
So there's that. So McKinnon, if you haven't checked it recently, is by far the leader for the rookie scoring race and probably the Calder.
Hey,
you come back to the tragedy of Tomáš Hertl, though. Dude's got 25 points, 15 goals.
I know.
He's got 7 fewer goals than McKinnon does,
mm-hmm.
and he's played he's played 31 fewer games.
I know.
Sadness. What could that rookie season have been?
Oh, the greatness that could have been. I know. It's completely true. But
Connor Simpson writes in, this is what happens when Jeff Merrick becomes a television superstar. That's right. We have to listen to him getting his equipment fixed. Join us tomorrow when we listen in on his tants getting tailored.
How annoying was it listening to my voice in that microphone? Like every time I would talk, Maddie would look over and be like, dude, what's wrong? Like, this microphone's all bust.
No, dude, I think it's really exciting. Like, I like any interview that we do where I sound completely clear and you sound like you're talking through a CB radio.
I sound like a freaking subway announcement. That's what I sounded like on the podcast the last 2 days.
That's right. I was very excited. I thought the number 6 train came in. But it turned out it was just you talking on the podcast.
No, it's me just talking about Sammy Kapanen.
There you go.
How about Colorado, though, with that big win last night? And 2 more points for Ryan O'Reilly.
Okay. Now, I've been called out, by the way, because I interviewed Razor the day of the Sportsnet announcement. You weren't here for it.
Right.
And we were talking about Tyler Seguin as he won't get the heart, right? Because mm-hmm. I think that people see the Jamie Benn thing and they'll say, oh, who really is the engine driving that train? And maybe it's both of them or one or the other. But I don't think Seguin's going to have enough juice to win the heart. But we were saying he's probably a lock for the Lady Bing. Well, okay, I know. Ryan O'Reilly doesn't have a penalty minute this year yet.
It's funny because you think me, I'm like a Cro-Magnon, you know, hockey lover, right? But like one of my favorite players played 64 games and doesn't have a single penalty minute.
Yeah. One of your favorite
53 points and 0. But at the same time, though, I hate that it goes to just a guy with low PIMs.
Yeah. But it will.
I know. I just hate it.
I proffered this morning that I liked the Matt Cook theory, which is that the Lady Bing should go to a player you don't expect to be well-mannered. Now, Ryan O'Reilly, for what it's worth, should be wearing white gloves inside of Downton Abbey. He is a very well-mannered player. Tyler Seguin, like I said to Razor, it is a minor miracle that they did not find him in a ditch wearing only cowboy boots and a hat at some point during this season. I think the fact is that our expectations for Gentleman Leaf for Tyler Seguin are different than they are for Ryan O'Reilly. So applying the Matt Cook theorem, we should give the Lady Bing to Tyler Seguin.
It's the Stan Mikita theory, right? It's the Stan Mikita Lady Bing, who goes from having 20 fights a year to just completely turning it around and becoming, you know, the biggest pacifist in the game.
Right.
from the guy that used to pass the fist to the pacifist.
For Christ's sake.
Thank you. I'm working on my puns next year for Hockey Night. Thank you.
Because that's what we need.
Yeah, we need some Sid music on that now.
Leo Komarov.
Yeah, the Finn with the Russian name. The two Finns with the Russian name, Komarov and Barkov.
Will Peterson writes in, of the short-lived NHL Maple Leafs fame, good you nicked Timu as a Ducks-Leafs fan in attendance at the Ducks versus Flames game last evening. Ever-young Timu was one of the few threatening ducklings throughout the atrocious affair. That was a terrible game for the Ducks last night. That's a very good point on that one.
They gave up four goals. I worked that game last night with Doug, and I mean it was overwhelming because the Ducks go into this one losing three in a row, and you're facing, with all due respect, guys, the Calgary Flames, and they were flat as piss on a plate from the opening faceoff. They did nothing. They gave up a power play, two evens, and a shorty in the first period. Boom, the game is over.
Doesn't that depend on the force of your urine stream? I mean, if you make bubbles.
No, but when it settles is my point. I mean, that's okay. Pretty flat, bro.
So not immediately, but like later on, if there's no urinal foam on the plate.
I was having a conversation with someone a while ago who asked me, just sort of getting into hockey now. Uh-huh. And he said, you know, I've followed other sports. I've talked to other sports people, and hockey seems to be the only sport that uses the phrase "he hasn't pissed a drop."
Yes,
is that true?
Is that unique to hockey? That is unique. I've never heard like it in another sport.
When someone is having like a bad game or having a bad season, oh, you didn't piss a drop all year. Like, is that true? Is that unique to hockey?
That's unique to hockey. I've never heard it in another sport. Maybe one of the listeners can clue us in if they've heard it in another context, but I think that is one of those hockey say-ins that is strictly hockey.
I've used that forever, but I always just thought that it came from sports in general.
We just saw that the other day. Who was it? Somebody said that around the trade deadline, I think. Or somebody. It was the U.S. Olympic team. I think Jonathan Quick might have said that.
That we didn't miss a drop.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe it is unique to hockey then. All right.
Pierre Smith writes in, hey guys, I know it's really early in his career, but I'm very excited about Timu's fellow Team Finland Duck, Sammy Vatanen.
Yeah.
Kid's not the biggest defender, but he's a fantastic skater and a great power play quarterback. I cannot wait to see him full time in Anaheim. Love the show, Pierre.
You know what's interesting about that? I mean, that's you throw Vatanen in there, you mention Hampus Lindholm, and then you throw in, and he'll be neck and neck for the most improved player of the year. With Victor Hedman, Cam Fowler.
Oh, yeah.
Has been different level this year. That's a great young defense Anaheim has for the future.
Isn't Cam Fowler interesting? I've been asked a lot about the Capitals recently because people are now kind of transitioning into the how will they blow up this team thing. And a lot of discussion centered around Mike Green. And Green, to me, is a primary problem with this roster because they pay him a lot of money.
Yep.
And they built the defense around him in some ways through the first couple of years. And he never blossomed. Like his career track in no way has resembled that of Cam Fowler, who is on track to he's on like almost the Niedermeyer-ish track right now. Fowler.
Skates like him,
right? Exactly. And Green, not only did Green get to a certain point and then just implode as a player, but he's not even that. I mean, like Alsner and Carlson are more important on that blue line than Mike Green.
Funny, we were having this conversation on Hockey Central at noon yesterday, and the point that I was trying to make, you go back to another famous Washington defense pairing. One of the reasons I always maintained that Sergei Gonchar was a great defenseman with the Caps was Ken Klee, because Ken Klee was back there to clean up the mess, you know, be defensively responsible, and that allowed Sergei Gonchar to be Sergei Gonchar. Mm-hmm. And maybe ultimately the failing of the Caps is not having a Ken Klee there for Mike Green.
So Ken Klee greater than sign Jeff Schultz, sir? Is that what you're trying to say?
Perhaps. I like my guys from Indianapolis.
Zach Walker writes in, Teuvo Teravainen, by the way.
He's coming to Chicago,
he's
too, isn't he?
He's coming to Chicago. I feel bad that expectations are entirely way too high for him, but he's the big hope that the Hawks can finally get a competent number two center for Patrick Kane.
Could be.
They've tried everyone. Sharp, Olin, Peary, Kruger, Shaw, even Kane himself.
Here's the problem.
No one seems to stick without underperforming or going in Quinville's doghouse. Yeah. Really excited for his potential. Just hope everyone can lower the expectations to a realistic level. Listen, expectations should be low. You won a cup with who was your number two center last year?
Michael Hanzus.
Come on.
The problem with Teravainen playing with Patrick Kane, he is the Finnish Patrick Kane. right? Mm. It's I don't know that he's necessarily a complimentary player for Pat Kane as much as he is a player like Pat Kane, right?
Sounds like a delightful Disney film. Like the real Pat Kane meets the Finnish Pat Kane, and then yeah. they switch lives.
Yeah. That's Melissa Bergeson, by the way, who's a favorite of ours around these parts. God damn it, Jeff, I'm trying to hold my bladder to listen to this episode.
Nancy Lucas, as a Rangers fan, I'm, of course, fond of Essetikinen, but my all-time favorite Finn was Ray Ruutulainen, who played for the Rangers in the mid-1980s. He was lightning fast and had a shot like a bomb from the point. Great image on St. Patrick's Day in his rookie year of 1982. He scored a hat trick and put on a green hat that someone had thrown on the ice. Being a full-on ginger and small in stature, he was totally rocking the leprechaun. Nancy from Long Beach.
It's funny because when Ray Ruutulainen's name usually comes up, it's usually within the context of what Glenn Sather would do with them with the Oilers. You know, right. He'd like hide away in Europe for the entire year and then come in at the end of the season all fresh as a daisy and provide the Edmonton Oilers juggernaut with an added layer of depth. Not unlike what Minnesota would do with Ron Wilson years before, but Ray Ruutulainen just took it to another level.
Paul Vogel writes in, Jyrki Lume is my favorite Finnish player because he was a boss behind Ronning and Bure in NHL 95 and had the best first name in the history of the world. Jyrki is a hell of a first name. By the way, don't Finnish names bug you? Like,
why?
You've got a Timu and a Tuomo. You have a Kapanen and a Vatanen. It's like lazy George Lucas Star Wars character names. It's just little one-letter variations of each other's names.
I always thought
an Oli and an Ollie.
I always saw it almost as lazy Japanese because there's a lot of J's and there's a lot of K's in them.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I always saw Finnish names.
Jussi Jokinen. I mean, honestly, Ma Jokinen.
It's good alliteration. Good for them.
Steven Schaefer writes in, my favorite non-Salani Finn is Olli Maatta. Kid is arguably the best defenseman in Pittsburgh, and his last name has six letters, three of which have umlauts.
Here's why I like Finnish names. Finnish names are awesome because they're fun to pronounce, and B, mm-hmm. most Finnish players, whenever you say their name, you always say both names.
That's right. You do.
Always with Finnish names. Always. Yep. When have you just heard Salani? No, it's always Teemu Salani because Finnish names are fun in your mouth, dude.
Kiprusoff.
Mika Kiprusoff.
Yep.
How many times did you just say Kiprusoff? You don't.
Aaron White writes in another one that you never use, just the last name. I'd have to go with Pekka Rinne.
There's another
one. When the Blues play him, but the guy is an absolute beast. The net, it's a bummer he got injured this season, but good he's back. I think the Blues only have one Finn, Jani Häkkinpää. There's probably a handful of missing A's and umlauts in there.
Hey, we mentioned with Jarmo Kekalainen when he was on about the Finnish hockey system and what Sweden has done to their system to overhaul it. Because for a lot of years there, the Swedish system was in the toilet. It was awful, right? It was probably right after that sort of Forsberg-Naslund group. But they totally reinvented the system. And you see it paying off in spades now. Now, let me know if this would fly in the United States, because I know it wouldn't fly in Canada. There's no way, because parents want trophies, and parents want championships, and parents want jackets, and parents want their kids to play on teams, God damn it, because they're living vicariously through their children. What the Swedes have done is the premium is on skill development and enjoying the game and, you know, learning how to play the game, but not being competitive. They don't start competitive hockey until the age of 12. You play hockey growing up, you know, you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, but you don't start playing competitively and structured until you're 12. I know that wouldn't fly here. Would it fly in the United States?
No.
Because
hockey parents is why.
And same thing in Canada. But right. Look at what the Swedes have done. And you know what? In Sweden, they did it. And you know what hockey parents did? Okay. It sounds like a good idea and it makes sense.
Interesting.
And look at the Swedish program now. Look at the level of athlete they're turning out. Because they just said, let's put the premium on skill development and not trophies.
A couple more Finns for you. Danielle Floyd, as a Finn myself, I love them all. I get excited and feel a huge sense of Finnish pride every time I see a Finn on the ice for any team. But if I had to pick just one, and it can't be Timu, I'd have to go with Kimmo Tiiminen. Tiiminen's interesting. Tiiminen is a guy who really wants to win a cup. And it looks like he'll have a shot in the playoffs, the Flyers, potentially. If he doesn't win a cup this year, he's in that weird sort of Nicholas Lidstrom area of, I'm going to see how my body responds in the offseason and go from there. He will not make $6 million next year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if he wants to play, he could find a place to play next season.
No doubt about it. No, I don't, I'm with you. I don't think it's the sixth ticket, but there's a place for him to play for sure.
Yep. Let's see here. Matthew Toy, Olli Jokinen, just for the waffle gif. Have you seen the Olli Jokinen waffle gif?
No.
All right. Head on the internets and look for that once we get off the show.
Waffle gif. All right.
Waffle gif. We never did an intro today. Did you guys get Mark Cole's new intro for the show?
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. We didn't do an intro today.
Should we play that as the outro?
Yeah, Maddie's doing the bobblehead.
All right, that's good. That's the show for today. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks to Jarmo Kekalainen.
It's awesome.
For joining us. And again, like, listen, we're not we're objective journalists here on the podcast, but F you if you don't want the Blue Jackets. Seriously.
We can't have you listening to this podcast if you don't want the Blue Jackets in the playoffs.
Do you want Columbus hockey to die on the vine, or do you want it to blossom into a beautiful vintage wine? You want it to blossom. You want it to be a place that hockey grows, and the only way you're growing hockey there is if they make the playoffs, mm-hmm. and you live and die through that team through multiple rounds. So get them in the playoffs. I don't care who they play. I don't even care what's the expense of the Devils. We have all of our cups. Someone else's turn now. I want Columbus in the playoffs, and I think it's one of those good for hockey things.
I'm with you.
And I know 100%. That, you know, I know sometimes good for hockey is applied to things like the Leafs and the Cup final.
That's good for escrow. It's good for hockey, and by that as a player, I mean escrow.
I like having Maddie in the room because it sounds like we're doing an actual nationally syndicated show where there's like a chucklehead in the background.
Yeah, it's like a bigger program. It's like we have Maddie who's ready to read like the news every 20 minutes or something like that.
Yep. Coming off of the program, Maddie the stunt boy is going to go down to the street and see if someone wants to lick this taco.
Oh, streeters, Maddie, get you doing what everyone loves to do when they enter radio. Isn't that your favorite position when you started? Oh, yeah, I get to do streeters.
Coming up on the show, Maddie's going to cover himself with honey and we're going to let loose some bees. Maddie the stunt boy.
I did that one last night, actually.
I know. Covers himself in peanut butter and heads up to the bars.
Welcome back to the program. If you've just joined us, Maddie the Stunt Boy is drinking his 20th Red Bull of the morning. And then we're going to have him jump into a Velcro wall.
It is good having Maddie in the same room.
Right?
It's kind of got like an Ed McMahon kind of vibe about it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Holy Mata, sir.
Yes, guy. Holy me.
Yari Curry. Hi-oh.
Oh, Yerke Lume, my eminence.
I'm off for the rest of the day. What are you doing for the rest of the day? I actually get like an evening off.
Banging out more genius on the Puck Daddy blog, sir.
You got a little sneak peek? You got a preview of what we can expect tonight?
I have a really cool story that I did not write, but that may come on the blog today or tomorrow, mm-hmm. and it is an examination of ice girls. Now, it is not what you'd expect.
Excuse me.
When I say that with regard to the Puck Daddy blog, it is written by a friend of ours who takes a critical eye to the idea of sexism in hockey vis-a-vis how you approach a female fan and say, hey, come watch our sport. Oh, by the way, try not to pay attention to the scantily clad babes we have around purely for marketing purposes. So it's a very interesting piece. I like it a lot, and it's either going to be on the blog today or tomorrow. And then we'll probably do a little bit of a trophy watch tomorrow too, I think. I have strong opinions about the MVP race.
You have strong opinions like about the Lady Bing race with my man Ryan O'Reilly.
No, I think they'd probably give it to the well-mannered Irish boy. You know, Tyler Seguin's been on his best behavior. I think we could all agree, though, that this will break the Marty St. Louis stranglehold.
Yeah, I think he's done. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he's done.
Absolutely.
It is not very gentlemanly to Shanghai your team at the trade deadline.
Oh, here come the hate tweets. Oh yeah, you're going to get it now.
Why?
Oh, man. When I shared my observations about Martin St. Louis' behavior on Twitter when it was all going on, man, did I get the venom back. Oh, nasty, too.
As far as, like, people defending his legacy in Tampa?
Yeah. All I simply put up there was nothing more than, you know, how does a guy ask for a trade, ask to be, you know, out of the market, and keep the C on his sweater? Well, simple.
I don't think there's anything out of line about that. I'm still trying to figure. I'm still waiting for someone to tell me why it had to happen now. Like, did it have to happen now because he could no longer be there because of the fallout with Iserman? Did it have to happen now because he wanted to play with Brad Richards before something maybe happened to Brad Richards contractually with the Rangers? Why did it have to happen now?
You know, I think it might have been more about Steve Iserman than it was about Marty St. Louis. That Marty wanted out, and it wasn't as if he was, you know, going in the tank. Like, Marty was still playing great. I think this was Iserman, you know, looking at things like the Luongo situation and saying, you know what, I can't let this become that. And the minute I have a chance to make this move, I'm going to do it. I don't know that it's the right thing to do because you have more opportunity at the draft and in the offseason, salary cap goes up and you have more room to wiggle. I get that. But don't forget, too, he didn't want this thing to fester and he wanted this to keep his team competitive because they have a shot at making the playoffs and they had a chance to add someone who can keep this team competitive.
And that's the other aspect of this, though, too, is competitive, okay? And the Tampa Bay Lightning are a much more competitive team with Marty St. Louis on the roster than without him.
Yeah, I know.
And to me, that's the other aspect of this. You know he's not going to stop playing. He's got too much pride.
Yep.
He's done it already. If you keep him, you got a chance at something in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. If you let him go, your chances significantly decrease.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said. I'm not saying it's the right move. I'm not saying it's the right move by Steve Yzerman, but I think he looked at what happened in Vancouver Luongo and said, that can't happen here. I think all general managers did. Said, man, we don't want this to happen to our team with a player. Now, mind you, what happened with Luongo may put, you know, essentially provide a framework for how to get yourself out of a market. Right? Mind you, it may just take longer, regardless of what your contract situation is. But I think a lot of general managers got scared when they saw that and said, oh, man, I don't want to answer questions the likes of which Mike Gillis has had to answer with the Aquilini family. I don't want to go through that.
Good point. We end the show today with a intro created by Mark Cole that has now become the outro in celebration of yesterday's 15 minutes of open mic.
Stupidity.
15 minutes of open mic stupidity as we tried to get the show in order. We present to you the new opening of the show that we are using as the closing of the show, because why not? See you tomorrow, everybody. Game Show Friday, and we'll talk to you then.
Ground control to Major Tom.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Hello, 1098765.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
This is like watching a Penn and Teller routine where they show how the magic tricks are done.
Debate hot. Pop culture and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Ground control to Major Tom, your circuit's dead. There's something wrong.